So big box religion, it keeps, seems to come at a cheap. We've got these churches are growing up all over town. I've noticed. It's really kind of fun to watch it happen. The big thing about big box religion is it grows out of a systemic drive to, for lack of a better word, colonize everything in sight. Why did it get this way? The so-called Axial Age, which is the 500 years or so around the time of the birth of Jesus, brought to this space and time an enormous amount of revelation. You had people like Buddha, Jesus, others that were never written about, who lived here among us, walked among us, and revealed something that was profoundly deep, profoundly interesting. And people caught on to it for about 8 seconds. Because anytime a message rises in the culture grabs it and says, oh, I know exactly what to do with this thing. We can only absorb as much as our culture, inner and outer, will allow us to take in. Do you understand that? So revelation may come in at 1,000 watts, but by the time it hits my little meager abilities, it's down to about 50 watts and running on, or on a lucky day, maybe 3 AAA batteries. So when I feel or experience something, I'm aware that the dream of God, as a friend of mine likes to call it, becomes my dream very much geared down. Unless I'm willing to admit that something has happened to me that I will never understand. I must come to grips with the fact that I will never understand what's going on. If I do, then I go into retail religion again. And there are shelves and books written about retail religion. So we follow the patterns of society. And when the social fabric, as we're living it now, begins to kind of disintegrate and unravel around the edges, it makes a lot of people nervous. Those who are extremely fearful and wondering and questioning and who don't want to see themselves drawn to a new space simply revert back to an old one and define their lives in terms of what they've already known. And so we turn into something like Colonial Williamsburg downtown, which is sort of embalmed, for lack of a better term. It's all down there, but it's all covered up. Inside, it's old, but we keep pumping it up and making it work, and it has its good moments. It teaches people some things. It teaches them about history, and I mean, they make a very sincere effort at it. But it's not real. It's a story. And they know that. But many people who come to town to live near this feel the attraction to that which is old and that which is stable, or at least appears to be that way. But life is always in motion. And when we come to a community like this, we can celebrate that moment. We can celebrate the fact that life is in motion. And we can be with others who are also in that same place, who want to move. One of the problems that retail religion is facing now is the fact that the world is going in different directions than it ever has. That obviously we're at some point in which ages are ending and new ones are beginning. But retail religion grows out of the experience of 2,000 years ago when religious thought was taken into the Roman Empire. And we've never gotten over that. Oh, what's the Roman Empire about? I don't like you, I'm going to take you, kill you, and take your house. And if I can do that, then I'll take something even bigger. There's something in our system that always wants more. And if I hear a word of revelation that I don't understand, I feel the motion, but I don't feel the mystery. I don't want to live with it. So I define it in the only terms I know how to do. And that is, I want to make you just like me. There was a lady in town who had, I pray for you. You remember that license plate that floated around town for a while? I hadn't seen it. I pray for you. And I used to think, what on earth does that mean? That means that she wants me to be just like her. And that's really so much a part of what religion on the retail level wants it to be. To sit in silence in one of these churches is unthinkable. Because if I draw myself into silence, if I draw myself into the love that abides within my own heart, that has always been a part of the deepest revelation, I might take a walk. I might say, look, this doesn't work. I'm being penned in. This doesn't make sense to me anymore. And a lot of people are feeling that. When I do conferences and classes, especially at the college, I'll get people that come up to me and they say, we've never heard this. I said, well, it's too threatening. It's way too threatening to retail religion to be talking about silence and to talk about growth and about having your own mind and, you know, examining the religious system in the light of current work and realizing entropy, the second law of thermodynamics, permeates everything at all times, and that these systems must come to an end. Okay. And so if we are in the business of buying and selling everything in our lives, we try to make ourselves into something perfect. And we surround ourselves with attempting to make a perfect world. And so we view the world constantly as out of control and evil, and we see ourselves as threatened and fearful and angry. Retail religion asks us to make ourselves into something that's perfect and to surround ourselves with perfection at all levels. So we build houses that are museums to Haynes furniture. Okay, whatever it takes. It's the story as it is. It's not bad, it's not good, it's just life going through life, going through life. But it hates to be caught just like we do. So then what happens? At some level we begin to waken a little bit and we begin to get restless and, you know, we might... Then everybody starts to shop for churches. You know, we've all been through that at some level or other. Either we've seen it or we've done it or we continue to do it. Or we go trekking off to Virginia Beach, or we trek off to some other thing, listen to gurus, whatever it takes. We want to deal with this unsettled thing, but we don't want to go backwards because we don't like what's there. I call this phase of life, the first part of it, kind of living in motion. It's a realization that the stability that we thought was there really isn't. It asks us to examine some kind of a medium through which we can find ourselves changing and at the same time being accepted as we go through that change. You follow that? The medium is a place, a condition, a community where someone who is looking to change, to adjust, to shift, to find some fuller life that instead of having boundaries, has horizons where that can happen, where it can be safely done and honored and treated as sacred. I notice there are lots of ads and things for massage and all kinds of body care and exercise and all kinds of things that gives us some relief, and it's wonderful. But it's always a relief for the moment. And relief for the moment is not the same as relief in which boundaries are... There was an article years ago, the late Alan Watts wrote it in the 70s, in which he talked about the fact that that self-improvement is a myth. It just doesn't exist. The more we push on ourselves, we're pushing boundaries, again, just exactly the things that we don't want to do. To enter the moment as you are, to be in a medium in which you can flow, is the greatest gift that we can give to ourselves and to one another as a community of people who share our life together. to realize that the present moment is really all that we have, and the life that we are given is all there is. This is it, folks. So the medium then must be that which for you and me is an individual moment that opens your life to all that is possible here, beyond the boundaries. And for each person, that's going to be an individual work and an individual moment. It may be art. It may be, who knows what it's going to be. I mean, it may have diesel fumes all around it. Who cares? But it's a moment in which suddenly I can identify myself as no longer having boundaries, but having horizons into which I can flow and into which I can feel myself open with greater trust and greater presence in life as it's given. You follow? All right, let me support this with a couple of junky little stories that I like to tell. I spent last week at something called Augusta Heritage, which is in Elkins, West by God, Virginia, as we say here. It's a community of people who have gathered for years and years to treasure the heritage of things that are West Virginia. They do quilting and all kinds of wonderful activities. And part of that is they have musical weeks. This week coming up is Celtic, and last week where I went was blues and swing. I thought, I have no idea what this is going to be like. But as a musician, I was aware that there are some underpinnings in my own work that are not there. Because when I was coming along struggling to read music, which I don't do well, my music teacher would say, you've got to learn Mozart. And I would say, I want to learn boogie. I want to learn jazz. I want to learn to No, because that wasn't valued back in the high Middle Ages. I thought, oh, it's nuts. So, I mean, I've developed a professional style good enough to pass, but there are some underpinnings that just aren't there for me. And I thought, well, let me go take the blues week. And I did, and it was marvelous. I studied with a little man named Erwin Helfer from Chicago, about 71, a little Jewish guy about this tall, absolutely an amazing piano player. And Earl, I said, how did you learn this? He says, well, I couldn't read music. He said, so somewhere in, I think, middle 60s, Erwin packed himself up and went off to New Orleans. He says, I just lived down there and learned the music. And over a period of decades, he collected the music because nobody else had done that. He went off to places where great artists were creating the music, and he brought a tape recorder, and he listened to everybody, he talked to everybody, he made friends with everybody, he played with them, and he recorded what he learned. Then he came back, and now he teaches and does concerts, and he is a compelling performer. And what he comes up with is this marvelous, wonderful sound that is so very, very basic. And that basic sound was wonderful. It was exactly what I needed. It was the medium that I needed last week to kind of reach something that I had never reached before. And one of the words they kept using all week at this conference was the word funky. Now, you have to understand who went to this conference. There were about 175 people. Now, the people in one of my little groups consisted of an orthodontist, a college professor, somebody who ran a music conservatory in Ontario. I can't remember. Everybody there was of a certain age, midlife. Illusions were gone. They were smart. They had learned everything they needed to know to get along and realized that somewhere within them, that was not enough. They had left, for the moment, the retail existence of medicine, college professoring, whatever it was that they did. They needed to get away to put their life into motion. It was a medium of expression to find and to achieve and to work with something that was very different, but for them, extremely lovable. Violin players, you know, all amazing group of people. It was a talent show Friday morning. It was dicey, but everybody had a good time. There were a couple of us there who were driven, of course, like we always are, and you know, wanted it done perfectly. But at the same time, we could enjoy with the people the fact that they were achieving something that put them into motion, that was a medium of expression in which they had a wonderful time and were surrounded by a community that loved them just the way they were. What's not to like here? And a little money bought it? No. I mean, it works. So the medium is the place that opens us, opens whatever part of us needs to be opened so that we can begin to see ourselves on the other side of the boundaries that drive us. We're moved through the medium to the next step, which would be a kind of a step three. And in that step three, we would see ourselves and the world around us as perfect in every way, just the way it is. We would see ourselves, our families, our friends, and all of creation with gratitude. This has been the message of the mystics forever in all traditions. It's all working. It's all good. If you don't like it, it's your problem. And in living this kind of thing, we live it and bless it, and we see ourselves as loved and understood in every part of our lives. So we move from a world in which everything is bought and sold into a place in which our hearts are open and there's nothing there to sell us. We're fine the way we are. Are you following? Do you need any definition? This is tough stuff. It's really tough stuff. And it doesn't work well on a lot of people. Because we want to argue with it. We want to defend the old story. We want to defend the boundaries to the death. We just don't want to hear this kind of stuff. The medium has something to do with personal practice. I was real pleased to see the little story about the piggies, because I think every church should be filled with piggies who are meditating. I've been meditating for years. It's the only thing that at some level has kept me as sort of sane than I am. But it's been a helpful thing. Another piece, and some of the members of this church do it, is yoga. A lot of us don't have a great relationship with our body. Why? Because we've been driven to buy and sell it. How? With pills and food and programs. Oh, we have another diet pill. We've got one over here. Aren't you 5 pounds overweight? Oh, yeah, I guess I am. Well, then your cholesterol is going to go bad and you're going to get diabetic. And we've got a pill for that. Do you see how constantly we're threatened? This rug is jerked out and then this one's put under and we've got 3 more pills to deal with. Oh. So in order to escape the mystery, there's something that has to do, and I think this is going to be the future of a lot of whatever spiritual communities are doing together, and that is we come to terms with who we are within our own bodies, because we've lost that in many ways. We just don't know who we are. We know how to push and drive and hurt ourselves and make ourselves work too hard, but we don't know what it means to just show up in our bodies. I read a yoga book. My first yoga book was, I was 24, and sitting in a seminary in Ohio, and I looked at this book and it was amazing. It just resonated, and it said, don't try this without a teacher. Well, there weren't a lot of yoga teachers in Ohio at the point. So I put it off, and I tried yoga on and off over a period of years, and about 2.5 years ago found Joe out at Sacred Grounds, and the magic is there for me. And when I want to get cranky with myself, I remember the kinds of things that Joe says, because he's so helpful. He says things like, we give you the postures to do, and you do the postures, but you don't have to measure up to anything that the posture demands. You find your own place in the posture. It's like a template. You find your place within the posture. You stretch to the point where you're not uncomfortable, but you feel yourself beginning to open, wherever that is for you. And in that open position, you relax and accept yourself and that moment as absolutely perfect for you. Boy, I wish I'd heard that when I was 10. I wish the nuns had told a lot of us that, remember? So, I mean, that's personal practice. What is it going to be? I don't know what it's... I read voraciously, but I'm also aware that doesn't help the way it used to. Because it puts me back into boundaries. It puts me into reading somebody else. It puts me into trusting somebody else's moment and not my own. Okay? Final story. Yesterday I did a wedding in a home, and I met Sister Madeline. Now, I had never met Sister Madeline. I'd heard about Sister Madeline. She was the kingpin over here at Walsingham Academy years ago. An amazing lady, and I could just see the fire in her eyes. You know, she's probably pushing 80. Sweet, sweet woman. She says, "I've always wanted to meet you." She says, "I'm Sister Madeline." We started to talk, and she was sort of taken in by this family years and years ago when their children went to Walsingham to go to school. And she's one of those old-fashioned nuns who probably struggled her whole life to stay as a nun because, you know, there's something that wanted to head for the door. We talked about, you know, idle conversation. She's retired up in Philadelphia. And I said, you know, what are you thinking about right now? She says, "Oh, the Pope, you know, Latin Mass, you know." And then she said, "They're bringing it back." And then what else? Oh, she says, and then last week he put out this horrible document saying that the Roman Church is the only way to be and to go. And she says, "That just makes enemies." So, this is going to be an interesting lady. And I wondered how she got tied in with that family years ago. And someone in the family told me a story about how Sister Madeline became their friend. Sister Madeline had the rebellious streak. But if you will remember years ago, nuns all wore these garments, lots of clothing. And Sister Madeline had been a nun all of her life. She had never, since the age of 18, worn anything else but that outfit. Now, here she is, she's in her early 40s. She's never been to a department store to buy a dress or do any of this kind of stuff. So the lady of the house said, "Tell me what you want and I'll make it." And she did. And so when the great day of putting the habit aside happened, Sister Madeline went over to their house, took off her religious garb. She put on, for the first time in years, a real dress. And they popped her in their car and they took her over to Surrey where no one would know her. And they had dinner with her. And she grew into secular clothing. Isn't that interesting? And I thought to myself, now, you know, what if we could create a community that did that for people? What if we could create something that looked like you, that drew you out, something that you could wear internally, that you had chosen for your life? Something that was community, that was part of us and part of you. Creating a community where you would be honored, where you would feel safe like a family. What a wonderful thing to have. What a wonderful opportunity. And it's not so much about adding on to what we already have as it is to open ourselves to new possibilities. I love this little quote from the Little Prince that Saint-Exupéry wrote. He says, "Perfection is finally achieved not when there is nothing left to add, we tell religion, but when there is nothing left to take away." Openness, safety, a community of love. Not a bad menu for the present and the future. So be it.